from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, and it is all about delivering now. After months of speeches and spin, a gigantic operation to get voters to the polls for George Bush and John Kerry will climax in the next 24 hours. Unprecedented efforts to push the vote, to challenge voters to seize the advantage in key states, are headed into full gear. Tonight on Point, the 11th hour push for victory in the 2004 presidential race. You can join this conversation. Have you seen the Get Out the Vote effort in your state? Are you part of it? Are you hearing from the campaigns on your block? And what's the bigger issue for you, making every vote count or watching out for voter fraud? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Later in this hour, we will be hearing from the Get Out the Vote shock troops in Ohio and around the country. But joining us first from New York is R.W. Apple Jr., chief correspondent and associate editor at the New York Times. He's former Washington bureau chief for the Times. He's covered 9 presidential elections and 19 national conventions. Not to mention, for years, how much of the rest of the world sees America. Johnny Apple, we are delighted to have you tonight. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Good evening.
Good evening. Also with us tonight from Bethesda, Maryland, is William Salatin, chief political correspondent for Slate.com. His election scorecard section of the Slate website has been tracking the polling numbers on a daily basis. Today, his analysis shows Kerry and Bush in a dead heat. William Salatin, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi.
Johnny Apple, you have seen a lot of these campaigns. This perhaps is one like no other. You've been traveling and hearing from all of your correspondents. Give us your grand view tonight as you look out across the country. What do you see?
Merck. it's a stunningly close election. That's not to say that you couldn't get a sizable majority in the Electoral College for one candidate or the other. That's the nature of the Electoral College. There are several states with large blocks of votes that could swing all in the same direction. That is to say, it's not inconceivable. It's unlikely in my view, but it's not inconceivable that President Bush could win Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, well, just those.
Which would be an electoral runaway.
Yes, it would. And people should not conclude, if that happens, that it wasn't a close election and everybody got it wrong, because it is a close election. As it looks to me right now, Mr. Kerry is in a strong position in what his campaign calls the Inland Troika, that is to say, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin.
It's upper Midwest.
Three states in the Midwest where I've spent the whole general election campaign, with one or two small exceptions, in the Midwest, looking at that part of the country, because it's where I'm from and it's going to be decisive, I think. But those three states look to be in pretty good shape for Kerry. Iowa seems to be the closest. Pennsylvania, I think Kerry will win. Florida, who knows, but give that to Bush and then you end up with Ohio as the linchpin. It's extraordinary what's going on in that state. That's my home state. That's where I grew up.
Which town, Johnny?
Akron.
Right.
There are more than a million new voters. The Secretary of State predicts that 5.8 million will vote on Election Day, which is just incredible.
Yeah.
That's a million more than in 2000. Imagine it.
It's huge, and what portion Democrats? Democrats have put on an enormous push there.
Well, a third of those million new registrations are in Cuyahoga and Franklin counties, Cuyahoga being Cleveland, Franklin being Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
Those tend to be Democratic. Many of the others are in smaller urban areas, Youngstown, Toledo, Akron, Canton, and of course some are in Cincinnati and in the Republican rural areas. So it's going to depend which of those new registrees gets out and votes. It's going to be an amazing day in the state of Ohio. I wish I were there instead of in New York, frankly.
That's where the action's going to be. Will Salatin, you've seen the polls all over the place in the last couple of days, everything looking very close. You talk to each camp, and each camp is ready tonight to interpret it in their direction. How are you seeing the polls? Is there anything beyond the murk that we can make out?
Well, you know what, the fundamental equation here, unfortunately, from the standpoint of poll watching, is the more we learn, the less we know. That is to say, I had a lot more certainties a week ago or even 2 days ago than I have now.
And why is that?
Well, you know, pundits like me, like us, tend to make quick conclusions about some of these states. And, you know, we tend to decide that a state is in play or out of play, and we tend to draw trends where we think we see a trend is actually just an average of some survey data.
Right.
And so states that we, you know, all of us wise guys thought were out of play, like, you know, Hawaii, becomes in play. A state that we thought was in play becomes out. And, you know, if you'd have talked to me yesterday, 24 hours ago, I would have told you, you know, Kerry has about 300 electoral votes. This morning, Kerry had, you know, and by our count, about 250.
Oops.
You know, now we've got it at a dead heat. We've had Florida go back and forth literally three times in the last 24 hours.
How does that happen? Just physically, you're doing rolling polling and it's changing each time?
Well, you know, we're just tracking the polls as they come in, and we are trying to be extremely conservative. That is, we're not drawing on any other data. We're not drawing on, you know, turnout figures, friends who call on the phone and say, hey, but there are long lines in Tampa, you know.
Right.
We're just looking at the polls, the public polls that are coming in. And, you know, you'd think, you know, in the old days, there used to be a poll, you know, every week, you know, maybe a poll every few days. Now there's polls every day. There's polls coming out at different times of day. So that literally we had a new poll come in Florida last night, which changed what we call the balance of evidence. We moved that over to Kerry. This morning we get another poll in Florida. You know, we move the balance of evidence goes back to Bush. And then by about noon, here comes a third poll and moves it again.
So we're back to that dead heat. Johnny Apple, you know that tonight listeners are hanging on every word about this election. Passion's running very high. We've got projections here of 120-plus million voters, up maybe 6 points from the 2000 turnout, something like 55 or 60% of the electorate, still hardly, you know, a shining example of democracy in action, but a bigger turnout. And then elements like today in Ohio, these two judges saying no Republicans, you cannot put people inside the polling places to challenge voters if you don't think some of these newly registered voters or others are legitimate. How major an impact? How big a deal was that? Were those rulings?
Well, that depends. Forgive me for waffling, but that depends on how close the vote indeed is.
Yeah.
If it's very close, the way it was in Florida 4 years ago, it will matter an enormous amount. If not, it won't matter as much. Certainly, I'd rather be in the Democrats' position in terms of the court rulings. But let me go back just a second to this question about polling.
Yeah.
Polling has its uses, but in my 10th presidential campaign, I tend to try to filter it through what I know from being on the ground. I've been in these states again and again and again. For example, Ohio. Ohio is the great disappointer of Democratic presidential candidates. Jack Kennedy said after 1960, it broke my heart. Furthermore, the polls are not only, as my colleague says, full of conflicts. Florida, the last six polls have had three one way, two the other, and two tied. That's all with polling through the 30th or 31st of this month, that is to say, through Saturday or Sunday. But remember, nobody ever does, but remember, they have a margin of sampling error of 3 or 4% either way, which means that a 46-49, for example, could be 49-46.
So the Times had Bush 49, Kerry 46 in its last poll, as I recall, and you're saying it could still go either way.
Yes, it could. And there's one more point. This is paid even less attention to. Polling professionals and academic experts on polling will tell you that quite beyond sampling error, one poll out of 20 is wrong, historically speaking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
and with so many polls out there, that means a lot of polls that can be wrong. Johnny, you talked about the number of new voters out there this year. How closely have you looked? We're going to hear from some people working on those projects, but how closely have you looked at the efforts that have produced that and the kind of voters who are being produced by the registration drive and likely tomorrow by the Get Out the Vote effort?
It's important to remember that most of the people, by definition, who are being registered anew are non-voters in past elections or new voters. Those two categories of people usually are people for whom politics has a relatively low salience. That is, they're people who have to be sought out, persuaded that it's important to vote, and dragged to the polls. They're not people, in most cases, who are dying to vote.
Mm-hmm.
It's the huge campaigns that have produced these numbers. So we shouldn't be sure how many of them are going to vote and how many from either party are going to vote. You tend to have lots of economically distressed and deprived people in this kind of thing. You have a lot of inner city people. You have a lot of rural people for whom all of this seems very far away. So it is really murderous to try to figure out what effect, when the votes are cast, all this is going to happen. Clearly, it's had an enormous effect on the registration. What's the effect going to be tomorrow? Hard to say.
Will Salatin, look into these voter numbers and the demographics for us to the extent that your polls have told you about them and what each candidate needs in terms of men, women, affluent, poor, black, white, Hispanic? Who needs what demographically to pull this out?
Oh, you know, Tom, there's a flavor of the week. You know, there's this week, you know, Kerry needs white men. Next week, he's trailing among women relative to Al Gore. You know, another week, he needs Hispanics. I try to avoid these games. You know, one of the interesting things, in addition to what Mr. Apple's pointing out about the margin of sampling error of these polls, another variable here is, you know, most of us think that polls are data. And that's true. They call people up and they ask them their opinion. But there's so much theory that goes into the data after the pollster gets it that the average person is not aware of. Some of these polls are adjusting for the kinds of demographics that you just talked about. And the most in particular, some of them are adjusting for party balance. That is, some pollsters are assuming that the electorate will end up being split between Democrats and Republicans. Others are assuming, for example, that 39% of the vote will be Democratic and 35 or 34% will be Republican. Mm. Now, those two pollsters are going to take the same data and produce completely different bottom line numbers with it. And one of them is going to be wrong about the composition of the electorate.
Well, we will have the poll tomorrow. Johnny Apple, we've just got you for another minute. You've seen a lot of these elections come and go.
One point to illustrate that. The Washington Post and ABC News poll together, that is, share the data collection. They adjust in different ways. And sometimes their stories and their numbers are not the same.
Johnny Apple, we've got you for about half a minute more. Are you willing to make a projection tonight through that murk?
No.
That close? Or too close?
Too close for me to do that.
And what about, we read in your paper today, the New York Times, that a majority of all voters say they're concerned their votes won't be counted properly, and almost 80% of black respondents express that concern. Where does that leave us headed here, Johnny Apple?
That's the election of 2000 talking. I think that there are moments when I think that what we really need tomorrow is a decisive vote one way or another so that the country is not dragged through weeks of and months, possibly even months of litigation, with people screaming my vote was stolen, with people claiming to have been denied access to the polls and so forth and so on. This is extremely unhealthy for this country. And it's very new. This is not something that has happened, that happened at all during the 20th century, a little bit during the 19th. But now it seems to be becoming a 21st century phenomenon.
It could happen through that murk, Johnny Apple. We've got to go. We know you've got to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Very great pleasure. Bye-bye.
R.W. Apple Jr., chief correspondent with the New York Times. We're looking at the 11th hour push for victory. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Just hours to go now before the polls begin to open in these United States for a big, big presidential election. We are looking tonight at the 11th hour push for victory in that presidential race. We're joined by Will Salatin, chief political correspondent for Slate.com. You can join this conversation. What is it coming down to? What will this election hinge on? And have you seen the Get Out the Vote effort? Are you part of it? How is it working? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Cristobal is calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Cristobal. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I'm a student at UNC Chapel Hill, and I'm actually a canvasser here in Chapel Hill.
For whom? For what party?
For the Democratic Party.
What do you see out there?
I see a lot of enthusiasm, a ton of enthusiasm on the part of a lot of students. This campus has a reputation for being heavily Democratic that's well-deserved. We registered record numbers of new voters during our voter registration drive, and now we're doing Get Out the Vote, and we still see it. And
yet the polls are neck and neck, Cristobal. How do you explain it?
I know. Well, I wanted to thank Mr. Apple for speaking earlier, but I wanted to assert something that didn't get brought up when he was discussing polls, and that's the fact that people who have a cell phone as their primary phone just don't get polled. I'm one of those. I've never been polled. None of my friends have been polled. We're all Democrats.
So you're the wireless generation, and they're not calling you up. It's a great point, and let me turn to William Salatin on it. Will, how about it? A lot of young people must feel like I'm never going to be called. They don't have landlines anymore. Mm-hmm. What about Cristobal's point here?
Well, what the pollsters will tell you is those of them that are sort of dismissing this. They're saying, well, look, if the problem is that we're not getting a certain group of people, say, you know, people of a certain age group, young people, because of the cell phone problem, well, we will adjust our data to that. That is, they will make sure that they call until they get enough, or they will wait the answers of young people who do have landlines to make sure that that group is well enough represented in the sample. That's the best they can do. You know, this is not the first time that technology has changed and public opinion research has had to change with it. Gradually, more people will have cell phones. You know, right now, for example, online polls are considered kind of crazy. You know, John Zogby is doing them for the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
But gradually, as more and more people have computers and fewer people have landlines, the online polls will begin eventually to make more sense than calling people on the telephone, that is calling them on landlines instead of cell lines.
Now, I am looking here at one poll from Zogby International and a nonprofit group, Rock the Vote, of 18 to 29-year-old likely voters on cell phones only. The only cell phone poll I've seen, and it goes 55% Kerry, 40% Bush. I mean, who knows? But is it possible that somehow in all the polling, there are segments who just haven't appeared that will appear like, you know, ships in the night, like the iceberg in front of the Titanic, and mess up all our expectations tomorrow, Will?
It could happen with the cell phones. I'm a little bit skeptical about the cell phones being the issue. I think the much more likely factor in terms of a missed vote is that a lot of pollsters are accustomed to using a likely voter screen where they assume that a certain percentage of the voters will turn out. Usually it's about 50%. You know, some of them are trying to be generous and saying, well, we'll assume it's 55%. What that means for you if you get polled is this. They try to ascertain, they ask you a series of questions as to how excited you are about the election, your intention to vote, your past voting history.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't make the cut of the top 55%, your vote doesn't get counted, or it gets discounted because they figure you're not probable to vote. So if, for example, the turnout goes up to something like 65% in this election, that's 10% of the people who can vote who are not getting counted in the polls. They're getting screened out of the likely voter sample because they're considered not to make the cut. But they are going to show up, and they are going to surprise people.
Let's get another call here. Kathleen is calling from Brewster, Massachusetts. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just got back from my hometown of Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, right in the thick of it.
Oh, right in the thick. My sister, brother, and I all gathered there with our best friends, who my best friend is a Democrat, and her husband's a born-again Democrat. but all her family are diehard Republicans. So.
Okay, so what do you see? How's it trending? Are you working out there? Were you?
Yeah, I worked. I worked at the Democratic headquarters over at a local, one of the local unions, and we put out a call effort and some canvassing. And there was enormous enthusiasm. And I have to say, the people, like I talked to at like Toledo Airport and people like that, It was so interesting. The women particularly kind of looked around like to make sure no one was hearing them. And they said, I'm voting for Kerry. It was like they had to secretly do it because the Republicans in that area are kind of scary.
But you know, Kathleen, that they're pushing a big get-out-the-vote operation, too, very big in Ohio.
Oh, very big and very mean-spirited, if you ask me. I have to say, my brother's a lawyer, so he had come to just help get out the vote and then do some polling, do whatever the headquarters wanted us to do.
I mean, mean-spirited you say, but you're a Democrat, so of course you'd say that.
Well, you know what was interesting? I really did meet a lot of Democrats from a cross-section. And, you know, there's a huge Islamic American community in Toledo, Detroit, and an amazing mosque that we stayed across from in Perrysburg, Ohio. And I don't think they've been counted in. In fact, the man that delivered our pizza to us at the Democratic, where we were doing the polling, not the polling, we're calling people
right.
They need rides to the polls.
Right.
He was from Iraq, and it was the most amazing encounter. He told us his whole story. Well, we were kidding with him. We said, now, your tip depends on who you're voting for. And then he said, very seriously, we said, that's a joke, but he said, very seriously, if I could vote, it would be for Kerry.
Well, there's one who can't, but you got some leverage with that tip. Kathleen, thanks for the report from Toledo. Great to have your call. Will Salatin, I know we've just got you for another minute here tonight. What's your sense of the relative robustness of the registration drives, the get-out-the-vote efforts of these two parties in the last 24 hours here?
Well, the registration numbers turned out, you know, there was an article in the New York Times, it might have been about a month ago, that shocked me because we had heard so much about Karl Rove and the Republicans getting people registered, had a massive get-out-the-vote effort. It was going to decide the election. And the Democrats were very quiet. Then along comes that story in the New York Times that showed that when you looked at the actual registration rolls, the Democrats were outpacing the Republicans in terms of new registrations by factors of 5 and 10 to 1 in Ohio and Florida. Now, since then, the Republican numbers have evened out a little bit. But, you know, I think there was some fear among Democrats that they were going to get outclassed on the get-out-the-vote mobilization part of this. That seems not to be the case, and my suspicion is we're going to be more surprised by the Democratic than the Republican turnout for the simple reason that the Democrats have been very quiet about it.
Mm-hmm. And you think they've got the strength working there. Will Salatin, we're going to let you go, but we'll ask you the same question we asked Johnny Apple. Have you got a projection, a gut feeling? Which way is the wind blowing tonight?
Well, I got to warn you, Tom, the last time I made a prediction, it was Bush's toast, and that was in 2000. So
Whoops.
My word doesn't count too much. But I'll tell you this. We have the race dead even in the Electoral College, very close in terms of absolute numbers between Bush and Kerry right now, and that is not accounting for a factor that usually happens at the end of an election, which is that the undecided vote never breaks for the incumbent president. So the odds are, if our assessment of the polls in the Electoral College are correct, that Kerry will do slightly better than that, probably enough to win.
So that sounds like, well, that is a Kerry guess, projection, gut, call it what you will, from William Salatin, chief political correspondent at Slate.com. Will, wonderful to have you tonight. Thanks so much for joining
us.
We are looking tonight at the 11th hour push for victory in the presidential race. You can join this conversation. What is it coming down to? And what's the bigger issue for you this year, making every vote count or watching out for fraud at the polls? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to take us right down to ground level now. Let's hear first from a Republican organizer in Ohio, key state tomorrow, maybe the key state. Todd Hanks joins us from Delaware, Ohio, about 20 miles north of Columbus, bills itself as the fastest growing county in Ohio. He's campaign chairman for Delaware County, Bush Cheney, 2004. He's auditor in Delaware County. Todd Hanks, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me, sir. I appreciate it.
It's terrific to have you. We also have, from Columbus proper, Greg Haas. He's a political consultant working for the Kerry Edwards campaign in Ohio. He ran the Clinton campaign in Ohio in 1992, has been a consultant in Ohio for 27 years. That's a little bit of experience. Greg Haas, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
It's
great to be with you. Thank you.
Good to have you. Todd, first to you. Give us a sense there in Delaware of how you are running the machinery to get out the vote tomorrow. What are you doing?
Well, actually, we're doing extremely large volumes of calling, door-to-door mailings. Everything seems to be running ahead of schedule. Actually, numbers are up higher than what we were expected to do and higher than what we even predicted to do. But I want to go back to your caller from Toledo that stated that the Republicans are mean-spirited. And I just wanted to qualify that if that's the case, how come it seems to be that I always read about Republican headquarters being targeted for some sort of malicious act by Democrats?
Well, what about that this year, Todd? We've heard a lot about eggings and signs pulled up and all the rest, and I can't say it just goes one way from what we hear.
No.
It goes both ways. How widespread compared to previous campaigns?
I'd say it's unfortunately it's widespread, and I wish I could say that it was just one-sided, but unfortunately I cannot at this time. Mm. Delaware's not immune to that situation either.
Yeah. Now, I know that in Ohio, at least I'm reading here, that they've got some 40 different coalition groups, social conservatives, sportsmen, church groups, social clubs, that were called on to help get out the vote. What's your sense of how you've done relative to the Democrats? Have you brought out, have you registered enough more voters to keep up or to surpass them? And what's your effort look like compared to theirs on getting the vote to the polls tomorrow?
Well, it's funny you say that, because in Delaware County, it seems to be that the Democrats are relying on 527 corporations and ACTS and all the other numerous political entities out there that are paid for, and yet here we are Republicans. We're doing it all as volunteers. We have people out in the rain every day walking door to door. It's a grassroots effort that's coming from the community itself. We don't need to import people like the Kerry campaign is here in Delaware.
Greg Haas, you hear the charge there. There's no question that the 527s have been very important, working independently, but nevertheless very supportively for the Kerry campaign this year. ACT, as Todd Hanks mentions, and others, he's saying, we're doing it on our own. You guys are paying and importing the help. But, well, A, is that true? And B, how's the effort going overall?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the effort is fantastic. I mean, we've never seen anything like this on either side. I'll agree with one thing Todd says. I think there's been a lot of the mean-spiritedness on both sides. I myself have had bumper stickers ripped off my car and the things that go on in campaigns.
Wow, that's up close and personal.
Right. We know, I mean, there's never been an election that has brought out the intensity of this election. And the truth is, I would agree with Todd, it's been true on both sides that emotions have gotten the better of people at times. But, and I'd also say it's not the Republican Party headquarters, it's always a target of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest factor in terms of what we're seeing with turnout is that, you know, at the same time, there's this intense emotional kind of push that's going on both sides. We've also got a lot of people who are, you know, willing to get into the process, to go out in the rain and go door to door. I wouldn't besmirch either side by saying their people are paid or theirs are not. I mean
Democrats have traditionally
into that. Yeah. I mean, Todd, you know, the fact is the Republicans were paying, you know, 3,000 poll observers $100 a day for Election Day. There's plenty of paid activity and volunteer activity on both sides.
But just give us a sense, Greg, of the structure of the Democratic effort. You've always had a lot of union support when it comes to getting out the vote. I'm sure that's true again this year. But the 527s are a new fact here. How important are
they? Totally unique to this election, although I think that, you know, they'll probably be around in some form from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been able to kind of stay away from the politics that campaigns get caught up in, you know, campaigns have got to kind of, you know, pay attention to party officials and pay attention to a lot of the kind of the local politics of elected officials and that kind of stuff, where the 527s have been able to go in and just kind of linear, you know, just be very linear and focus specifically on a job at hand. And ACT in particular has just done an outstanding job of getting voters registered and then staying on top of them, continuing to communicate with them, and it's been something that I've never seen before in any campaign. I mean, there's just a tremendous amount of work. You know, tomorrow the Kerry campaign is going to have 65,000 volunteers statewide working in the campaign. I remember, you know, in 1992 when I ran Ohio for Kerry, we were excited about half that, and we thought we'd done something fantastic. In 1982, I ran the field campaign for then-Governor Celeste, and we were ecstatic about having 20,000 people.
So we've got a big increase on those numbers. Todd Hanks, we read a lot about the sophistication of these efforts now, about canvassers out with handheld computers, really keeping track house by house of who's leaning where it's worth putting your effort. Give us a sense of how you're working at that level. Are you collating this in a big new database that's going to be a new foundation for GOP work?
We sure are, but the amazing part is the detailed in the, at least I can speak from my side,
yeah,
is that the detail that's going into this election isn't even comparable to a local election, and yet we're doing it on a national scale. The reports that we have to do and file in and make sure that we know almost to the hour of what's going on, so we can go back and make sure all the Republicans on that street hit for a voting situation. It's incredible. You don't see this kind of action on, like I said, a local level for even the auditor of the county. This is phenomenal on what's going on. Like I said, I wish I could speak for the other side. I can't.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's probably going to be echoed in the same sense.
Let me ask you about these late rulings from two U.S. district judges in Ohio, Susan Dlott in Cincinnati and John Adams in Akron, who ruled that neither party can have campaign workers in the polling places tomorrow challenging voters when they show up about their legitimacy of their registration or their voting there. This is being described, Todd Hanks, as a victory for the Democrats, who have a lot of new voters coming in. How do you see it? What impact do you expect?
It's an unfortunate setback. It possibly could be construed that way. I think that the Board of Elections, I'm hoping, in all counties, targeted or not targeted in the state of Ohio, are going to be fair and biased and everything, and we're going to have to trust that the system is going to work itself.
I mean, were you planning on having campaign workers in the polling places with their finger in people's faces challenging their right to be there voting?
No, I wouldn't say that challenging by putting the fingers in the face. We're just making sure that the legitimate person is voting and is only voting at the one correct time. Correct.
Mm-hmm. And Greg Haas, how do you see it from the Democrat side? How important a ruling was that?
I think it was very important. You know, I personally don't think lawyers belong in hospitals or funeral homes or in polling places. I think it was a farce that we were looking at sending, you know, lawyers across the state into every polling place. And frankly, you know, it is about voter suppression. I mean, whatever makes the Republican Party think they can do a better job than the Board of Elections, which is made up of both Republicans and Democrats, in looking at who legitimate voters are and aren't, is pretty ridiculous. And the fact is that what really was going on in a lot of the polling places that were targeted were inner city polling places, and the design clearly was to slow down the voting process, expand the lines, and hope that people turn around and leave.
Greg Haas, we're going to hear more about that tonight. We've just got a few seconds left. What's your projection? 27 fat electoral votes in Ohio. Who's going to get them tomorrow?
Well, there's only 20.
Oh, 20. Excuse me. 20.
Well, we'll take 27 if you'll give it to us.
No.
I think Todd and I will both agree to accepting.
Has your man Kerry got it wrapped or not?
Yeah, I think he's going to win by 3-5.
And Todd Hanks, what do you think?
I guess we're going to agree to disagree on this one. I'm thinking we're going to carry this state by 5 points.
But it's great having you both. Todd Hanks, campaign chairman in Delaware County, Ohio, for Bush-Cheney 2004. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, sir.
And Greg Haas, political consultant working for Kerry Edwards in Columbus, Ohio. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
We are looking at the 11th hour push for victory in the presidential race. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are looking at the 11th hour push for victory in the presidential race tonight. You can join the conversation. What is it coming down to? What will this election hinge on? Who's got the election eve momentum in your neighborhood? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. There has been a lot of talk in this election season, this campaign season, about all those new registrations out there and about the major efforts that both parties are planning to get their voters to the polls and into those voting booths tomorrow. Talk of legal challenges of all sorts right across the country and, of course, in particular, in the famous swing states. We've got a couple of guests who will help us look at those issues right now. Joining us from Washington is Doug Chapin. He is director of electionline.org. And, Doug, I wish you'd just tell us in a nutshell what your organization is.
Certainly. We're a clearinghouse of election reform news and information set up by the Pew Charitable Trusts after the 2000 election to provide a comprehensive, unbiased, and reliable source of information and analysis on election reform.
And do you lean left, right, up, down, Democrat, GOP?
We are nonpartisan, non-advocates. We're as down the middle as you can be in the current environment.
Okay. And also with us from Washington, Robert Trainum. He is a senior advisor to the Republican National Committee, former deputy chief of staff at the Senate Republican Conference, former political director of Black America's Political Action Committee. Robert Trainum, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So you're paying attention as well to these issues at the polling place, if I've got it right, Robert.
No question about it. Just to let you know, I'll put a bug in your ear. We're definitely partisan. We lean more right.
Yeah. We've got that. We hear that loud and clear. Robert Trainum, then give us your, from the GOP perspective, going into this incredibly intense vote tomorrow with everybody so keyed up, what are your concerns? What are you looking for as millions are pushed out to the polls?
Well, number one, we're looking for a very decisive victory come tomorrow, and I'm very confident that we will know the winner, which will be President Bush. But secondly, and I would argue just as importantly, we're very concerned in looking out for voter fraud. That's a very, very big issue for us, and we want to make sure that every single eligible voter out there, regardless of race or income or what have you, so long as they're eligible to vote, we want to make sure they come out to the polls.
We just heard from, you may have heard it, from a Democrat in Ohio saying this effort is aimed at minority communities, at inner city communities. It's a way to try and, you know, ball up those polling places, make the lines long, intimidate people, keep people from actually coming out to vote. What do you say to that, Robert Trainum?
Nothing could be further from the truth. And again, we want to make sure that every single eligible voter out there, not just in Ohio, but in Florida and Wyoming and Wisconsin and California, Pennsylvania, all over this country, we want to make sure that every single eligible voter out there votes. What we don't want is we don't want deceased people voting. We don't want Mary Poppins and Dick Tracy and George Foreman and some other fictional characters voting. And the reason why I say that is because there are over 250 published articles out there that span 15 states and 62 cases where fictional characters such as Dick Tracy, Mary Poppins are registered to vote. Individuals that have been dead for 10 or 15 years are still eligible to vote. People that have vacant lots in hotels as their registered place of address.
Right. We've heard a lot about that from the Republican Party, and we know the song sheet there, and those stories are not pretty stories. Doug Chapin, you're supposed to be down the middle here. There's been also a lot of charges from the Democrats about kind of systemic efforts to influence the volume of turnout in particular voting regions. Step back and look at this tomorrow. Everybody's concerned about getting a straight-up, honest depiction of what American voters want. How do you see us positioned for that?
Well, I think what we're seeing recently is a classic, timeless battle between the parties, where a partisan difference actually reflects a deeper philosophical disagreement. Republicans tend to worry more about the integrity of the process. Democrats tend to worry more about access of individual voters to the polls. And so, as a result, any effort to make sure that only eligible voters cast ballots on Election Day, as you often hear Republican sources claim, is met with charges of intimidation. Any effort by Democrats to bring new voters into the process or register heretofore underrepresented populations, if those registrations don't follow the letter of the law, are met with cries of potential voter fraud. And so I'd be hard-pressed to say that either party is going for naked partisan advantage here. I really do think that they view these problems through their own individual policy lenses.
But tomorrow it's going to be a fact on the ground in thousands and thousands of polling places. What is your organization, electionline.org, anticipating in terms of the kinds of problems, challenges to vote, outcome that exactly this kind of issue may produce?
Well, what we're expecting, really, if the 2000 election was all about disputed ballots, the 2004 election will be all about disputed voters. I mean, Ohio is not the only state in the nation that is going to have either has had a challenge or will have challengers in the polls. There are other states where challengers will attempt to question voters' credentials. If that happens, many of those voters will be given provisional ballots to cast, and then those provisional ballots, whose validity will be determined after the election, could end up being decisive in some states if the election is close. So I think tomorrow, other than the usual suspects of voting machine malfunctions or late poll openings because poll workers slipped in, I think that the dominant controversy tomorrow will be over voter eligibility eligibility in just about all its forms across the nation.
I would agree with that.
Doug Chabon and Robert Tranum, stand by. I want to welcome to our conversation an old friend of On Point, John Harwood, political editor at The Wall Street Journal. John Harwood, wonderful to have you tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
John, we've just been hearing from a couple of guys who are paying very close attention to what happens in the polling places tomorrow. The whole country is worried about this thing being all snagged up in challenges of every kind and coming out with an indeterminate outcome. What do you anticipate in polling places? Are we going to see long lines as voters get challenged one by one, or are we going to have a mess tomorrow?
I think in some places we may have a mess. I think there will be long lines, but you know what? In this election, people see big things at stake. They're willing to stand in line. We asked people in our Wall Street Journal, NBC poll, do you think this election is one that will make it, whose outcome will make a great deal of difference to your family? 75% of the people said yes. That's why everybody expects a large increase in turnout. And at the end of the day, all this stuff about fraud, which Republicans, for their part, do believe that there is significant instances of fraud, and voter intimidation, and Democrats sincerely believe that Republicans are trying to keep down the vote, those are going to be dwarfed by the legitimate turnout of real Americans who care a lot about this race.
John, you've written about efforts at vote suppression here. Are you saying that as sophisticated as those can be, the get-out-the-vote effort is so much bigger that that's where the action is?
Well, I think the level of intensity, polarization, and motivation in this election is more powerful than the attempts by people in any political party to limit turnout. You know, there are different ways in which this is done. Part of it has to do with the messages that each party sends, trying to damp enthusiasm on the other side. Democrats might try to dull the interest of conservative Christians in voting for President Bush. Republicans might try to make people in the black community less enthusiastic about Kerry. That's a little bit different than what happens at polling places on Election Day. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is motivation is very, very high.
I want to hear from our callers again. Patrick is calling from Racine, Wisconsin. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that here in Racine, Wisconsin, throughout the state of Wisconsin, there's a get-out-the-vote called New Voter Project. And somebody affiliated with the New Voter Project has just been charged with felony voter fraud, voter registration fraud in Racine County. And in Milwaukee County last week, there was... The Republicans challenged the legitimacy of some 5,600 voter registrations that had addresses that did not exist, and the Milwaukee Election Commission let the voter registration stand with those 5,600, let it be legitimate, without even, they decided in like 20 minutes to just let them all stand.
So it sounds like you're on the side of being worried about fraud in this election, Patrick.
Yeah, I am, like, because if there's a high amount of fraud, it cancels out my legitimate vote.
Patrick, we've got it, and thank you for your call. Doug Chapin, speak to this Wisconsin voter who's reading the newspapers, seeing these reports, and feels uncomfortable about them. John Harwood says the get-out-the-vote effort is going to overwhelm whatever sort of fraud might be out there in its volume. How do you see it?
Well, I think that's one of the core issues here is that I think we all agree that there's some degree of fraud in registration and voting. I find it impossible to believe that there's no one out there who's trying to defraud the process. No one has a very good handle, though, on how widespread that fraud is. In other words, we've identified the threat of voting fraud, somebody having registered multiple times, somebody voting multiple times. What we don't yet know is the degree that we're at risk from that threat. And until we have a better idea of that, and I'll be the first to admit I don't necessarily know how we'll go about that, it's hard to determine how much of this is a real problem and how much of this is concern brought on by the two parties or the two philosophies differing view of the access versus integrity divide.
Let's get another call. Monica's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Monica. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Great. Thanks.
So I'm a graduate student in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I am registered as a Democrat in rural conservative Pennsylvania. Now, this morning, I called my election board and asked why I hadn't yet received my absentee ballot because I've sent in an application twice.
Okay.
And they insisted that they had never received it. And I apparently have no legal recourse. I checked in with my county's Democratic Party, and I have no legal recourse.
So do you think they've got you targeted as a liberal voter up there in Cambridge, and they're not going to send you one?
That's what I'm afraid of. But what I've done today is spent the entire day trying to find a way to get home. And so tomorrow morning, I'm taking the first bus out of Boston to get home in time to vote.
A long bus ride to make it happen when the absentee ballot didn't arrive. Good luck with that ride, Monica. I hope you get there in time. Robert Trainum, how about it? Doug Chapin is saying, Republicans not really wild about having these big new numbers of voters. Monica's saying she couldn't get her ballot, but is that a fair representation?
Well, I'm not sure it actually is very fair. You know, the Republican Party has registered over 3.4 million new people to the voting rolls. And interesting enough, some of them have been in rural areas as well as in very urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, let me just go back to my original point. We want every eligible voter to vote. We just want to play by the rules, and we expect our Democratic colleagues to play by the rules as well. The more people that vote is good for the process. It's very healthy for democracy, and it's great that everyone, again, that's eligible to vote is able to speak with their ballot. And that's exactly what we want.
We've
Tom,
got it.
Could I make one more point?
Yes,
then
John.
I've got to run, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I disagree with Robert to this extent. Both parties want voters to vote who are going to vote for their candidate. I have been with door knockers on both sides in this campaign. They're trying to go door to door, identify people who are sympathetic to President Bush or Senator Kerry, register those people, mobilize those people. They're not indiscriminately registering eligible voters. They don't want everybody who's eligible to vote to turn out. They want the people who are going to vote for their guy.
Sure do. John Howard, last question I'm asking everybody tonight. What are you expecting tomorrow? Do you have a gut feeling? Do you have more than that, Bush or Kerry?
There are reasons to be optimistic for each guy. There's some late movement towards Senator Kerry that if he can sustain, especially with some of those new voters, he may be in good shape tomorrow. He needs to win either Ohio or Florida.
John Harwood, political editor at the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Doug Chapin, to help us anticipate all the news that's going to come flooding out of polling places tomorrow, what are the major categories of problem that you're anticipating, and how should we understand these reports when they start blossoming?
The viewer's or the listener's guide to Election Day, I think probably the first rash of stories that we'll see, if we see them, will be of machine problems, machines that don't boot up or machines that don't start up properly so that poll openings are delayed. I would imagine not long after that we'll start to see the first wave of stories about long lines at the polls and people frustrated with the amount of time it's taking to negotiate the process. If we do have any Ohio-style challenge controversies in other states, I would imagine that those will probably bubble up in time for the midday news. We may start seeing courts involved in various places trying to hash through the same issues that were litigated in Ohio and the states where they occur. Later in the day, we may get a sense of how many provisional ballots have been cast, especially in those states that will not count provisional ballots cast in the wrong precinct, because that might give us some sense of where those ballots might end up being determinative in a close race. By the end of the day, we should have a pretty good picture of how the day has gone, both in terms of technology functioning, in terms of challenges in states other than Ohio, or maybe including in Ohio, depending on what the appellate courts do. And then tomorrow night, it'll all come down to, is the outcome close enough and close in certain states enough that we are once again in election overtime in 2004 as we were in 2000.
Is it outside that margin of litigation? And what's your gut tell you tonight, Doug Chapin? Can we avoid that? Or are we going to be in the courts with all these challenges around the vote itself?
I think it's going to entirely depend on how close the election is. If the election is close, we will very much be in court about the result. If it's not close, we'll still be in court, but after the fact to get some of these policies straightened out for the next go-round.
Oh, boy. Let's hope not. Doug Chapin, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Doug Chapin, director at electionline.org, and Robert Trainum in Washington. Very grateful to you for joining us tonight as well.
Thank you.
Robert Trainum, senior advisor at the Republican National Committee. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.